If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to this week's Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and while the war dog was banking on stupidity in this week's vote, I always bank on having the smartest podcast listeners in the world. Part of the reason for that is having one of the smartest co-hosts, Jessica Lewis. And I'm not just saying that because she got this week's prediction right.
I know. Look at me. Thank you for that introduction, because I do feel pretty proud of myself this week because we all know I am not good at predictions. But... For whatever reason, I really nailed it this week, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You did. And, you know, that damn CBS, they broke Kubicki's law by actually telling the truth in a preview.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it happens every once in a while. And I got suckered into thinking there was no way War Dog was going, even though as I look back to collect notes, it's like, oh, yeah, probably should have seen this coming.
Well, I think we should spend the rest of the podcast just referring to me as the Jessica, because the Jessica got it correct. And then
the Jessica.
The Jessica.
I don't even refer to War Dog as the War Dog.
I know. Didn't he correct somebody in one of the tribal councils too? Or refer to himself as the War Dog?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, of course. His Twitter handle is I am the War Dog.
I know. So. It's so great. So great. But yes, I do have to say that was a prediction that I was very excited when it actually came true. Not because I was excited that War Dog went home, but that I was actually right for once. And I'm thinking I'm heading down a good path here. This is a good start, because I predicted Rick was going to come back and he did. I was right about War Dog, even though I've been wrong about a lot of other things. At least I got two things under my belt. So maybe I'm heading in the right direction.
All right. Well, we'll see. I, on the other hand, am heading in the wrong direction, because an area where I thought I saw signs pointing to something last week, I was wrong, because I had suggested it was possible Julie was in on the anti-Kelly plans last week and that she and Gavin were part of a vote split. And I thought I had this big revelation. And yeah, not so much. That was quickly shot down in this episode, because neither of them were in on the plan. Neither of them were particularly happy about being left out. But
yeah, it's such a weird mix of voting that seems to be happening.
Right, right. And so the one thing I will claim, credit for is that at least I was right that Julie wasn't at all mad at Ron after the vote. And, you know, they're the tightest two left. Other people were saying, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Did Ron just throw it away? No, Julie was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I mean. It's such a strange set of, like, it's not voting blocks. I don't even know what it is. It's just like people are just voting.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's really weird.
Yes, it is. And I think we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, the problem is we're having to make these guesses. And one reason is this ongoing lack of web clips with no explanation from CBS or Survivor to where they are.
Yeah.
The lack of interviews, which we knew about ahead of time, there's just this dearth of outside information, and the editing, we've talked about it before. It's been choppy too.
Yeah.
You know, from episode to episode. So it's really hard to figure out what is going on here. And, you know, this week we had two pretty much meaningless secret scenes, and I just keep getting angrier at them.
Yeah. And the thing is, without having any of the articles, the web clips become that much more significant, because those are the moments that you don't see on TV, but they give you those little nuggets that you don't see on TV. And people are sharing information about why they're voting a certain way or what the plan is and how they're going into tribal council. And yeah, we're seeing none of that. So it's really hard to really know where people are coming from, why people are making certain decisions. And yeah, I mean, we're guessing at a lot of it, unfortunately, just because nobody's sharing it. Nobody.
Right. Right. I almost wonder if, remember when they had the secret scene or the web confessional with Kelly, that prove that it was a Frankenstein clip where she was talking about Rick. Mm-hmm. I wonder if like the producer of the web clips got in trouble. And so that's why we don't get him anymore. It's
you
like,
know, that's interesting.
Gave out too much information. You're gone.
Right. Yeah. Like one of the interns screwed up that day. So like, no, we can't do that anymore. Yeah, I don't. It's definitely very strange. And honestly, like I feel for the cast, too, because that's kind of a nice thing to have out there, mm-hmm. you know, where you can at least go back and see confessionals that weren't on the show and secret scenes and things. And they're not even getting any of that for themselves. So that's unfortunate, I think, for them just as players, too.
Yeah. I mean, not only are some of them purple on the show now, they're invisible on the web as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really quite strange. So we have a very difficult task.
We do, but, you know, it's not going to stop us from pulling together all the other information we have, including the older stuff, and comparing it against the rules I wrote after Survivor's first season, and which, of course, I've been updating ever since. And, of course, anyone who wants to review those themselves can go to robhasawebsite.com/Survivor38Rules. And then there's a shorter and much more colorful version of the rules that we've been talking about, which you can find at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster.
Yes, you should definitely order it. It's 11x17, looks great in a frame, and it's beautiful and colorful and has all of the rules that David has created.
Yeah, I just got a frame for it myself. I just came. I haven't put it in yet, and I'm going to hang it up at work. And there's only a few people there who know anything about what I do here. And the rest of them are going to be like, what the heck is that? But it will be a way to bring them in and get them to watch Survivor.
It's true, because they are not only going to see the incredible poster itself, but your name is on the poster. So they're going to be even more intrigued. It's not like it's just something that you brought to work that you enjoy. You're actually named on the poster. So they have to ask you about it. They have to.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's a great trick. I like it.
Yeah. So anyway, people should go ahead. And like I said, you can order at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster. And I mentioned last week that we've had orders from Canada, England, Ireland, Singapore, Australia, and more. So if you are outside the U.S., let shipping department Jessica know and she'll work out the details with you.
Yes, I absolutely can do that. We've done it thus far and it's worked out exceptionally well. So we can certainly make that happen for you.
Okay. So getting back to War Dog.
Come on, David, you got to do it at least once.
I did, actually, in the opening paragraph. You just didn't notice.
Well, so, but we should stick with it.
No.
He would appreciate it.
No, there's too much of that.
All right.
So going back to our preview podcast, when I just called him Dan, I believe, I thought War Dog would be kept around until the merge due to his challenge ability.
Mm.
And then would be targeted in part for those reasons or around merge time. It's not exactly the way things happened on a number of different fronts.
I still don't know if he was faking it. Was he just pretending to be bad at all of the challenges?
Oh, I don't think he was pretending. I guess we'll find out when he has a challenge to get back.
That's true.
And Gabby said something to him on Twitter about, voted out at the same time I was. And he said, yes, but I'm still in the game and have a chance to get back. And I was going to respond and say, yeah, as long as the challenge doesn't involve throwing, balancing, swimming, but then Gabby wrote
butterflies,
back before,
anything. Yeah.
Gabby wrote back before I could and said, I've seen you in challenges, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, it would be hysterical if he was, in fact, faking it the entire time.
Yeah.
And he just powers through whatever challenge there is to get back and crushes everyone.
That would be really funny.
Yeah. So we'll see if that happens. But in the meantime, we still have our own questions that we have to address. If Challenge Beast was not the reason that he got voted out, which it wasn't, then, how did he make it this long? Why was he targeted now? So it's time to figure out why the War Dog lost.
There you go. Perfect.
All right. We're going to switch things up again a bit this week and start with the fifth rule, which discusses how players have to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And the main reason for doing this is that there's been a lot of discussion about whether Wardog could have survived his move against Kelly if he had just been nice enough to people so they wouldn't turn on him. Rob and Angelina talked about it on Know It Alls, for example. And, you know, usually when we switch up the order of the rules, it's because we want to point to something right away and say, yes, this was a big problem and we're not going to wait to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, that's not really true, at least from my perspective, because I don't think this was his fatal mistake. I think there were other factors at work that were more important, which we'll get to as we go through the rest of the rules.
Yeah, I think Wardog was actually good at playing with people, but I think sometimes he was talking at people while he was playing with them. And I don't think that felt good for the people on the receiving end. And we heard a couple of people comment about that. Gavin in particular was referencing how he was kind of being told what to do. And I don't think that Wardog was doing it because he was being confrontational. I just think that was the way that he was presenting himself. I mean, he's put himself out there as he'll be a leader if he needs to be, and he's going to make decisions, and he was making decisions. But the way that he went about doing it, I think, rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, we've got two things here. I mean, we'll get back to Gavin in a second, because like you said, he wasn't the first person to mention this side of Wardog. You mm-hmm. know, along the way, we've seen a number of people who have complained about the way Wardog has treated them, whether, you know, he was barking at them or he was telling them what to do, you know, not speaking to David for days, being too aggressive to Ron or what have you. As you know, like Rick said in one episode, don't Wardog at me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and whether Wardog had planned to work with Gavin or not, it's almost never good to talk to another player like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it goes. So I said this wasn't the fatal problem, but I don't want anyone to leave this to get the impression that I'm saying it was a good idea to do what he did, because mm-hmm. it wasn't. I just don't think that was the specific cause for him getting voted out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if you just look at the varying ways that he was with people out there, I mean, he had an incredibly close relationship with Kelly and Lauren, even though he did end up voting out Kelly. But he referred to them as friends, like they were absolutely like close friends. They got along with each other. There was no real issues there. And so he clearly was able to play the social game as far as building bonds and creating relationships. But he didn't, I think, create enough bonds and relationships with everybody in that way. I mean, he tried, but not in the same manner. And then, as you said, he kind of war-dogged at people. And I think that that's kind of where he ended up having a divide, where it was like the people that did matter got more of the Wardog who was genuine and listening and willing to kind of talk through things with them. And then the people who weren't part of that circle got talked at and were told what to do. And unfortunately, he didn't have enough people in that circle that he had that type of relationship with, because I think he offended more people than he didn't offend.
Yeah, he had an interesting run of being both likable and annoying.
Yes, it's weird. Yeah.
You know, his plan coming into the game was to be a jester so he could distract attention from his play. And I think he succeeded early on, at least until around the double episode, which would have been like 5 and 6, when he tweeted that losing the peanut butter on day 12 was demoralizing and created a rift between himself and Lauren.
Mm.
And, you know, at that same time, he also tweeted that the lack of shelter on the Lesu Beach, on top of everything else, brought him to a new low point, and he lost focus on what made him successful for the first 10 days, which was, quote, surprisingly, my likability.
Yeah.
You know, he felt that he was lucky to survive Lesu, and I just wonder if that same sort of thing isn't taking a toll on him now. You know, we've seen him be likable, but I just don't understand why he talked to Gavin that way. I mean, is it related to, you know, is he really just suffering the full effects of being on Survivor? You know, we go back to a web confessional from episodes 5 and 6, where he was talking about how he had gotten the same rice rations as everyone else, even though he came in at over 200 pounds and the others on his tribe were all 120 or less. And he talked about how starving starts to affect rational thinking. So I don't know if, you know, it was just that situation coming back again. And I mean, we don't grade easier just because there might be a reason for not pretending right. to be nice, but maybe that's a possible explanation. It's really the only thing I can think of.
Well, and I think there might be a combination of things, though. I think that's part of it. Yeah, he's suffering from the effects of Survivor, but I think he was also suffering from the effects of feeling like he was in charge and seeing that he was making decisions and making things happen. And that, I think it got to his head a little bit, because it was all of a sudden he expected everybody to then just follow War Dog and do as he wanted, because he kind of put himself on a pedestal, if you will, like, ha, huh, look what I did. I made this move. I got Kelly out, and now you better all come along with me for the ride, because this is, you know, I'm driving the train and this is the direction we're going. And unfortunately, with the group of people he's playing with, they're not playing like that. They don't want to be told what to do. They all want to have their own plans. And I think that's why we've seen such a weird disparity in the votes and who's voting with who, and not knowing really who's going to be upset or who's going to be aligned with who, because there is this very strange, I think, idea that they all have, that they all want to be the one making the decision, except maybe Victoria. She seems to be kind of doing what other people are advising her to do. But I don't know if he just got into his own head and felt pretty sure of himself and his game and thought, all right, I'm in charge and I'm going to be the leader now moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, like I said, I don't think it was actually his fatal mistake. And we will get to that in, I would estimate a couple of rules. So we can move on to rule one. So you can guess where a couple of rules might take us. And yes. We'll go back to our usual order. And of course, rule number one is to scheme and plot. And, you know, like I mentioned, War Dog came into the game with a plan that he explained to Josh Wigler and other interviewers ahead of time. And he did execute that plan, which was to be the joker I mentioned a few minutes ago, in order to throw people off the idea that he was strategizing. A couple weeks ago, War Dog said on Twitter that he'd been playing the exact game he carefully designed since day one, as stated on First One Out. He was playing the jester and being obvious, and it was working for him. A couple months earlier, he said on Twitter after episode two that Coach paved the way for him as the blueprint to use War Dog, the name War Dog, to hide mm-hmm. how strategically lethal he could be, which worked at least from days one to six, which was when he tweeted it. When, you know, whatever he's tweeted, he's always tweeted just talking about that point in time.
Yep.
And, you know, I do think it continued to work after that. Even David said at one point back then, War Dog doesn't talk strategy, which illustrates how well War Dog was hiding himself at the time.
Yeah.
And then he tweeted a few days later that despite people thinking he'd make himself a bigger target by calling himself War Dog, it actually allowed him to hide in plain sight for at least, again, those first 6 days. And then by episode four, he said in the web confessional that his tribe mates underestimated his intelligent decision making, though maybe not as much as before they saw him organize the Chris vote at the time.
Yeah, I do think that he came in with a definite plan about downplaying how smart he actually was and not telling anybody that he was in law school. And yes, having this persona as War Dog, kind of a military guy. And so he pulled it off beautifully, because that was what we saw and that was what everybody else saw. But he also, he was forced to have to play this game because they were losing so much at the beginning. So you have to scheme and plot because you're going to tribal council repeatedly. And he obviously did a really great job at forming the relationships with people that he was going to be scheming and plotting with. And so I do think that, you know, overall, he had a kind of a quiet way about doing it, but he also solidified himself a strong group that could scheme together and make decisions together. But yeah, nobody suspected that he was running things or leading the charge, because they really were working so well together as a group.
Yeah, you know, and as the season continued, you know, after all those things he said early on, he just kept bouncing along strategically. He seemed to be acting as a swing vote a number of times on Manu and Lesu, but really he was solid with Kelly and Lauren, and therefore earned their trust to such a high level that Lauren didn't use her idol when she theoretically could have multiple times. And then, of course, when Kelly didn't use her idol when she mm-hmm. should have,
yep.
You know, and then but by the time the merge came around, Wardog gave himself, well, humorously gave himself an A-plus grade on Twitter.
He
said he'd been in 5 tribal councils, had no votes cast against him, 5 targets sent home, and 5 of his plans, 3 of which were solo, 2 joint, were executed. And then along the way, he tweeted a number of similar things to kind of update it, basically showing how well he was doing in the game. And it is true, he was. Even when we got to the craziness of the tribal council that sent Julia home.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, we mostly saw Rick start the process from what we saw on TV. We discussed at the time how Julia tweeted that Wardog played the most instrumental role in the vote. And she said he's smart as hell and he analyzed the situation and capitalized on the meltdown.
Oh, he was so brilliant during that tribal council because it really was a snowball effect. Once it started going and his ability to take that information and keep the motivation going where, I mean, you and I have talked about the live tribals and that doesn't happen, but he was able to actually continue the momentum. And I mean, really what was so great about it too, is he saw Julie freaking out and kind of losing her mind a little bit and getting and very anxious and getting upset. And he let her make the decision. He saw that and he used it to his advantage but went to her and who do you want to go home? Give me a name. And that's what's going to happen. And it was a great play for him because he didn't make it about himself. He didn't make it about the group of people he was voting with. He made it about Julie, the one person who was being the most vocal about feeling like she had been on the outs, that she was left out of the last vote and she was really upset. And he saw that and he capitalized on it. And I think in that particular tribal, we really got to see how quick his brain was working, which is impressive because, yeah, when you're hungry and you haven't been sleeping, your brain is kind of in a fog and it moves very slowly. His clearly wasn't. And I'm very impressed with him at that tribal council.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, that was a perfect example of doing a good job of on the fly scheming and plotting. And like you said, you give me a name, we'll vote that person out. I mean, mm-hmm. that is, you know, that's classic way to get something done.
And to earn someone's respect
right.
and trust because you're saying to them, who do you want to go home? And then that's the person that goes home.
Right.
So it clearly is going to help create some type of a bond between you and the person that you've just given what they wanted.
Right. So then we, you know, move along another vote and, you know, he got rid of his nemesis, David, and then he decided to make a move on the last returning player. He knew he had to be stealthy. So he had those quick conversations with Aurora, Rick, et cetera, to get them to vote against Kelly. And we'll talk about the timing of that in the next rule. But as he told Ron, they couldn't let a returnee get to the end because they know how it often ends when that happens.
Yeah, no, I think that was true because we've seen, I'm sure multiple people have seen the statistics that returning players almost always make at least the final 3, whether or not they win. But yeah, they've got a great story if they end up sitting there in the end as the returning player. So he did recognize that was going to be a huge issue for his game. But yeah, I think we need to discuss the timing of that.
Yeah. Well, okay, we will. But first, you know, so far everything we've discussed in this rule has been talking about what a good job he did here. But there were some areas where he could have done better. For example, his rift with David and not speaking to each other for that long period of time. I know he considered David his nemesis, but still, on Survivor, you don't want anyone where you're not talking to them at all. And he needed to do something to try to mend that, or at least apparently mend that, so that they could talk to each other. Because remember, that was how the whole argument started with Rick, when Wardog had to go talk to him about getting the band back together because he couldn't talk to David about the best way to handle it.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there was, it's so interesting that he did so well creating the relationship that he did with Lauren and Kelly, but then he just couldn't extend it out beyond Lauren and Kelly, it seems. And I do think that he had some very significant problems in his ability to scheme and plot with those people that weren't in his inner circle. And we saw how he basically got laughed at by Rick Devens when he tried to do that.
Yes.
So I do think that he certainly didn't do the best that he could in that particular situation. He did it obviously on the fly in that tribal council, and he was great at it. But you have to remember, you're with these people 24/7 on an island. And if you're not speaking to at least one of them, maybe even two of them, then you are missing a huge part of the game. And we all know how David played this game, and we all know that he's very strategic. And to lose sight of how you can use David in your game is truly, I think, problematic for the game that Wardog wanted to play. He could have definitely used both Rick and David to his benefit and had a strong group of five, but ended up only having the three of them, really.
Yeah, and that continued when he had his argument with Gavin in this episode. I mean, I understand he had his reasons for not including Gavin in the Kelly blindside, and they were good reasons. But he had an opportunity to reopen lines of communication because Gavin said he had trusted Wardog 100%, and they were tight prior to that vote.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, Wardog turned a potential ally into an enemy. From the sound of it later in the episode, he didn't even talk to Gavin about this vote to try and get him back on his side.
Yeah.
You know, now, again, again, we'll discuss later how I don't necessarily think it would have mattered, but still, the same thing happened again there.
Yeah, and that's what I think is kind of like the reoccurring theme with him, and what we've seen throughout the season is that he makes really great decisions with the people that he's playing the game with, but then I do feel like he loses sight of the game as a whole, and that you're really going to need all of these people, and you can't leave some of them in the dark. You can't leave some of them on the outs. And if you do, you have to be ready to actually address that and give them a response that makes sense. And Wardog didn't do that either. It was still kind of just like brushing that person off. And when you make them feel insignificant, they're going to want to then what? Vote you out, which is exactly what Gavin wanted to do.
Yeah. So I want to backtrack a moment and look at how things started out this week for Wardog. Because, you know, I keep bringing this up, and we'll get to it more, I said, in the second rule. But let's look at what situation he was in. He had just blindsided Kelly with the help of Rick, Ron, Aurora, and Victoria. Now, Rob said on the feedback show that Wardog needed to keep together those who had voted out Kelly by targeting one of the people who didn't vote with them, which raises the question of whether he could have done so. You know, we talked about this. We've seen shifting alliances throughout the season, and Ron said it well in the confessional this week, along with waving hands and everything, looked like he was juggling, saying, if I don't work with you this week, maybe I will next time.
Mm.
And I was just making the motions of Ron doing that, so you can
see. If only we
that.
Had a video
right.
podcast, you'd get to see that.
Yes. Well, just imagine Ron, and there you go. But could Wardog have kept Ron and Victoria with him if he had said he wanted to target one of the people who weren't involved in the Kelly vote? And I don't know that he could have, because the other the possible targets were Gavin, Julie, and Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way Ron was going to target Julie, so that's off the table. I don't think Ron or Victoria would have agreed to target Gavin either. You know, there's a difference between not working with someone, you know, for one or two votes and actively voting them out. We saw how those two were the ones comforting him and saying, no, you're not the next one out. Now, I know they could have been lying, but clearly he wasn't. And I don't think that they would have all stayed together if Gavin had been the target. So, mm-hmm. You know, that would have left Lauren if Wardog wanted to go after her, which, quite honestly, might have been his best bet for the moment.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because the idea of him then voting out Lauren, I think, could have made sense, because you get to that whole idea, and I think I talked about it last week. If you end up in the final three with Lauren and Wardog and they've played the same exact game, then people have to kind of pick between the two, you know, who actually was making the decisions, who was actually leading the charge. And it might have been to his benefit to then say, okay, now I want to target Lauren because she and I have been playing the same game all along, and I don't want her getting credit for my moves. So she's got to go. And maybe they would have went along with that.
Yeah, it's possible. And to me, that's the only option that would have kept that group together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, last week I said I thought Wardog could bring people back together again. And I just thought he would use the same strategy that he had used up till that point. But we didn't see it this week. Instead, you know, Gavin said he felt like he was next on the chopping block. And for all we know, that was War Dog's original plan. Maybe that's why he was talking to him that way, because originally he was like, yeah, I'll just get rid of Gavin next. But, you know, we really don't know what it was other than working with Rick and Ron, which, of course, is still a minority. The only thing I can figure is that maybe he thought Ron could pull in Julie, and maybe he could pull Lauren back, or that everyone would be happy to target Aurora because, I mean, they keep talking about it. They never do it, but they keep talking about it.
Right.
You know, it's like he just figured he could make something materialize like he had so many other times up to that point and just pull another rabbit out of his hat.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like he kind of got into his own head where he had just pulled off a rather impressive move and he got Kelly voted out. And so he's kind of feeling like he's king of the world at that point. And I can make whatever I want to happen next. And I think his idea of going to Ron and Rick was a smart one, you know, with the, we all need to protect each other because we're all the biggest threats in the game and we have to kind of be, you know, shields for each other. And I think that was smart of him to do, but he also needs to be mindful of the relationships that he's had with those people throughout the game. And he and Rick, tumultuous relationship. Yeah, I mean, and so I don't know how much Rick is going to care about protecting War Dog. And you've got Ron, who is such a great liar. I mean, he just lies to everybody and it's amazing. But he also has Julie. So it's and that seems to be like a pretty clear defined too. So if you go to Ron, you have to kind of assume he's going to go back to Julie. So it seems like War Dog just thought, well, I've already been able to pull off a threesome already with people on the island, and here's my new three. Like, we're going to be the new three moving forward. And unfortunately, I don't think he was thinking about all of the other times that he had had issues with these people or didn't really try to create a bond with these people, because all of that comes back when everyone's making a decision and when they're looking at who they want to play the game with and when they're looking at who they want to vote out, they're going to remember all of that. And Rick, I'm sure, remembered all of that. But obviously, you know, Rick was the one who still voted with him. So it's just an interesting thing to see happen. And I think I got to give him props for trying. He definitely tried. But I think all of those other relationships and people that he had negatively affected, it came back to bite him this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and head to the second rule, which I've already been hinting at. And this rule tells players to avoid scheming and plotting too much and backstabbing too soon. Now, War Dog had been preaching loyalty just a couple tribal councils ago and using his trio as an example of how it was done. But former Reality News Online and RHAP blogger Christian Williams said on Twitter, when you eliminate your closest ally, you immediately declare a jump ball and loyalty no longer works as a selling point.
Yes, exactly. People do not understand how important loyalty is in that game. And it's, I mean, I think people understand it, but it is so significant. And the fact that he was willing to cut Kelly, who is his number one, if you will. I mean, he, and like you said, had just been talking about how they had been together since the beginning, always voted together. Yeah. And then you end up, and then you vote her out and you lead the charge to do so. Yeah. No one is then going to listen to you promising them, oh, I'm going to be with you till the end and it's you and me and we're going to protect each other, because they're going to be like, well, wait a second, what about Kelly? You know, what happened there? You know, and so I really do think that was a huge problem for him to try to then gain favor with those people, because they're going to be looking at how he treated Kelly.
Yeah. And, you know, War Dog had to know this. So the question is, why did he make the move when he did? And if he was correct to do so at that point, or if he backstabbed Kelly too soon?
Totally jumped the shark.
Well, okay. you're leaping to the conclusion
before
we get to the analysis.
I know. I'm sorry, but I had to say it.
Yeah. So, you know, so people may recall that back when the Kama Alliance turned down itself and voted out Eric, people were criticizing them for the timing of the move, but I said, no, it could have worked if only they hadn't lost control right after it. So you might think that I would therefore have a similar take this time and agree with those who say The move was fine, but the actions afterward were not. But as I said when we were discussing Rule 5, that's actually not where I stand, and I have flipped sides myself on this one. I think that the comma would have banded back together again to target the threats, especially the non-comma threats, almost no matter how Wardog acted at that point, because the move just seemed premature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem is we don't know why Wardog felt like he had to make the move at Final Nine. I asked him on Twitter, and unfortunately, it appears that CBS has once again put a kibosh on my Twitter press conferences. Based on the timing, it was probably because of the unbidden Twitter press conferences that Julia and Victoria had after the Julia vote. But, you know, just like I said, looking at the timing, looking at the sudden reduction in tweet volume. But Wardog did say, if we saw the key conversations with those left out of the vote, we can probably understand why it had to be then. And, you know, we know that Wardog has been doing math all season long. So,
yeah, but I still feel like it wasn't necessary, because you've got at least a couple of votes before you need to start turning on each other. And I think you could make a much better argument as to why you turned on somebody who is one of your loyal in your trio, someone you've been working with the whole time. Argument later where you can say, okay, well, I had to take her out now because if I sit next to Kelly in the end, she's beating me. And so I had to take Kelly out if you happen to be sitting in the final three. But if you do it too soon, then you're not going to make it to the final three. So there, the right. timing of that is everything. And all he did, and he knew this too, he knew who are the biggest targets right now. Who are the people that everybody is looking at? Nobody is looking at Wardog as long as Kelly is sitting there. People are looking at Kelly. And you know, he would come after Kelly. So the fact that he got rid of his own shield.
Well,
totally,
wait, hold on. Yeah. That's a later rule.
I know, but it you know, I do think the timing of it though was it was too soon. It was unnecessary. There was other options on the table. Other people that, I mean, everybody wanted Aurora gone for like every vote now. So, you know, I mean, I just don't know why you need to make a move now that you didn't have to make, because it didn't seem to make any sense.
Right. But clearly he saw a reason. So let's go through it, because, okay, if he didn't make the move at nine, then Aurora probably would have been voted out. That mm-hmm. seems to be the way it was trending. That would have been one less person he could work with to turn on Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, you jump all the way ahead. Final four is fire making, and he wouldn't have, you know, so he obviously couldn't wait that long. You wouldn't want to wait until final five, because that's just pushing your luck. Even final six is risky in case she has an idol. And at some point, you know, around then, they probably figured there would be a return from Extinction Island, which could have thrown a wrench into everything, depending on who came back.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand not wanting to wait till five or six. But if he'd waited one more vote to final eight, well, he still would have needed five people, but would have lost Aurora. So maybe at that point, Ron could have gotten Julie to join them, since they would have just voted out her archenemy, Aurora, which would have given them the necessary five in himself, Rick, Ron, Julie, and Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Julie wouldn't have wanted to vote against Kelly anyway. We just don't really know. It also would have meant convincing Kelly that someone else was the next target, and, you know, she would have had to buy it. Now, as far as we know, Wardog didn't know that Kelly had an idol, but we do have to remember he's a smart guy and had to figure there was a good chance that she or Lauren had found at least one of the Manu or Lesu idols. If that was indeed on his mind, then waiting until the next vote might give her time to realize that things look suspicious.
And that is all very true. And possible. I don't discount any of that, being a consideration in his mind. But I still think that he could have at least gone one more. Could have at least gone one more vote, because I do think that Julie probably would have come around, because if that's what Ron wanted to do, because what is the reason for voting out Kelly? She is going to beat us all. And that's exactly what he was telling people. We have to vote her out now because she's going to win. Right. That doesn't change one more vote. She's still going to be a threat to win the game. So you still have that as a selling point as to why you need to vote her out. And you can also say, all right, and look at the numbers are dwindling. There's less of us now. We don't know where there's hidden immunity idols. Like, we got to make this happen. So I think that he would have still been able to make the same pitch and it would have seemed less aggressive just because you have the ability to say we're getting down there and we've got to think about, you know, where we are with the numbers and idols and fire making and all of these things. And it probably would have, I think, ended better for him if he had just held off at least one more vote.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, because this is where the lack of interviews and web confessionals really hurts us.
Yep.
Because we just don't know why he made that decision. So thanks, CBS.
But, we appreciate it.
Yeah. I guess all we could say right now is that he believed it had to be done right then, even with the risk inherent in doing so.
Right.
It looks from the outside like it was done too soon and exposed him too much. Steven said on Twitter that the story of this season was a player turns on their alliance. That player is immediately voted out at the next tribal council. You know, rinse, repeat. And, mm-hmm. you know, now, as Rob has pointed out, Steven has been a big advocate for not doing much this season, which is interesting because last season at this point, he was all in favor of the go big or go home moves by people like Gabby. Now, I don't want to leave this rule without mentioning that this was not the first time people thought of Wardog as scheming too much. As much as he tried to hide his true self, as we discussed in the first rule, he couldn't do it forever. Earlier in the show, we heard David say things like he spends most of his day strategizing and crunching numbers. David and Kelly talked about how Wardog was so obviously plotting. Kelly at one point earlier called him a schemer and a manipulator. Ron called him very aggressive on, or words to that effect, on multiple occasions, and also said he was a loose cannon and talked too much. Julie said in episode 10 that he was dictating who went home, and that didn't sit well with her. So it wasn't just one vote. It was the overall image that he already had, and then that vote.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because I do think that people don't want to be talked at. They want to be included in a discussion. And I think he just was looking at his report card, as he referred to it, as you've already talked about, and how well he was doing. And you kind of start to feel good about yourself and, oh, well, I can keep this momentum going and I can keep these things moving forward and keep the votes the way I want them to go and get people out that I want to get out. But you then start to lose sight of the other people who are playing the game with you and how they're perceiving you. And we know how important perception is on Survivor. And if they are perceiving you a certain way, even if that's not the way that you feel like you're acting, if that's what they think, then that's what it's going to be. And I think he ultimately suffered that fate of kind of being controlling and taking, you know, a leadership role a little too far, a little too aggressive, and really, really upset people and put the target immediately on his back.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, before we move to the third rule, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors if there's one in your area. If not, we'll be back even quicker. And we're back, so let's move on to the third rule, which talks about being flexible. So how do you think Wardog did here?
At being flexible?
Yes.
I'm going to go with... it's interesting. I'm gonna start there, because clearly he was very close with Lauren and very close with Kelly. But like we've talked about already, he stopped speaking to David. So that's a bit of a problem. I think that the relationship between that trio and David and Rick really kind of showed itself in that crazy Julia tribal council when David like reintroduced himself to Kelly. So clearly there was a lot of speaking not going on with that group of three and that group of two. So I don't think he was flexible like he needed to be with those people that were not in his immediate group. And I've already kind of talked about that as well. So I think he was a little too forceful in what he wanted people to do, and wasn't willing to listen to other people's suggestions and kind of take that in. Instead, it was more of a, this is what we should do and this is why we should do it and this is what we're going to do, instead of talking through it with other people outside of his group.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that we often saw him considering all his options and choosing the one that he thought would best suit him. Mm-hmm. So at least, you know, at least he was considering. But you're right, he did often end up you know, back with the same group again. It's like we said in the early episodes, he was portrayed as the swing vote. And I guess technically he was, but he always ended up on the side of Kelly and Lauren.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's bad. It, you know, that might have been what the best thing was for his game at the time.
Yeah. And then when he decided he didn't want to be with them anymore and voted Kelly out, he had himself voted out. So
yes. Yeah. Yes.
Being flexible probably didn't help him there.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. And I think in general, Wardog did fine here. You know, way back in episode 2, he spoke directly from my heart when he said, every move you make should be a rational decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is 100% true, both in Survivor and life in general. And I think he stuck to it, you know, even after Rick gave him the sarcastic blow off a few episodes ago. Wardog was willing to put that aside and work with him again, not to mention giving him one heck of a mud rubdown.
Oh, my word. Yes, that was a lot to see. But no, I do agree with that, that he did seem to be coming from at least a rational place when he was making the decisions that he wanted to make as to why he was voting out certain people. And yeah, I mean, that whole conversation with Rick could have definitely, his response to that could have been so much different than it was. And he kept it all in check because he was trying to play Survivor and he was trying to play a game and he wanted to work with Rick. And I think that we saw him continue to try to fix that relationship that he had with Rick, as we saw in this past episode where he wanted to work with Ron and Rick, and we three need to work together and protect each other. So I do think that he was willing to make decisions based on game moves and not emotional decisions.
Yeah. Now, with this said, we already talked about how Wardog spoke to Gavin. And, you know, the question is whether he did so out of emotion or he was in game mode while doing it. It felt to me like there was some anger there directed at Gavin. And I think he even said something to the effect that he was upset with Gavin. Now, you know, I mean, he might have said that as game, you know, and not really been upset, but it, presuming it wasn't all part of some game move, then, well, yeah, he should have known better than to do that, as we discussed. But also, as we discussed earlier, I suspect there was a level of hangriness involved there.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think, again, that was the fatal flaw.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think that he did point some things out, like when he was talking about Gavin in particular, and why Gavin, you know, why Gavin was voting the way that he was. And there was almost this making fun of him a little bit, like, oh, Gavin would have voted with us just because he wanted the numbers. And so it's almost like he was poking fun at Gavin's game. And Gavin, I don't know if he perceived it that way, but clearly Gavin was upset by it. So it's, again, it's presentation and the way that he is interacting with people. And while it's not from an emotional place necessarily, it's that idea of how are you going to be perceived when you say these things to this person? And the last thing you want to do is cause them an emotional response for what you're saying, which is exactly what we saw happen, I think, with Gavin.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, all right, we can move on to the sixth rule because we already addressed the fifth rule. And this rule warns against being too much of a threat. There was so much discussion of being a threat at this tribal council than the rest of the episode leading up to, and really the past several episodes, because there has been a massacre of threats leading up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week we specifically mentioned how Kelly got rid of her returning player shield the moment David was voted out. And I think the exact same thing can be said about Wardog after he voted out Kelly.
Yeah.
This group of players was so focused on the returnees that Wardog could have continued hiding behind Kelly for a while longer.
Yes. And this is the part that I don't understand, because you saw exactly what happened to Kelly. You know, once David's not there anymore, who's everybody looking at? They're looking at Kelly. Nobody's looking at Wardog as long as Kelly is there. I really do feel like he should have done everything he could to try to keep Kelly there and just to protect himself. That's really what he needed to do, because if you look at who's left in the game, there are still, and I've already talked about it, other options that he could have focused on. You know, Aurora, like we talked about, everybody wanted to vote her out. If Rick Devins is clearly someone that people are looking at, although he had immunity this week, but there are definitely people he could have pointed at and said this person or that person, and Kelly would have been right there along with him, as was, you know, Lauren would have been too. So you've got three votes to start with the decision that you want to make. And again, he's shielded by Kelly. So as long as Kelly is there, no one's talking about War Dog. They're going to talk about Kelly, unless Kelly started talking about War Dog, and then you have a different conversation. But yeah, he certainly blew up his threat level as soon as he took Kelly out.
Yeah. I mean, by eliminating the threats like her, he became the biggest threat remaining.
Yeah.
You know, Gabby from last season said on Twitter that she likened War Dog taking Kelly out to her own attempt to vote out Christian, and that she wasn't a target until she tried to do it. And as far as we know, neither was War Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Compounding this, as Ron said, if you're too aggressive, you become a threat. And we already talked about how people saw War Dog as aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he really caused this outcome himself by that decision. He should have waited at least one more vote, maybe even two. I know it would have been harder with the numbers, but that's what we're seeing this season, is that the people who are the most threatening or viewed as the most threatening are the ones that are getting voted out. And if you are sitting there having a conversation with Ron and Devin saying, we need each other because we're the most threatening people that are left, then clearly he saw it too. And he has to be aware of what the ramifications would have been and what they turned out to be by voting out Kelly. I feel like he had to have figured that out, since he's doing math the entire time he's out there. I don't know. It seems strange that he would have missed that or not realized it.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to think that this is all, and this is not a hot take, it's been discussed on a number of podcasts, this is all a direct result of Ghost Island. You know, they were shown the finale of Ghost Island at Ponderosa before the game started. No one wanted to be Laurel, even though, you know, they obviously didn't get a chance to hear the podcasts where we talked about this, and it was clear that Laurel was making the best decisions for herself at the time, because you said it earlier, you can't win if you don't make it to the final three.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. you know, yes, Laurel did not win, but if she had made a move, much like the people are doing now, she would have ended up getting voted out, much like the people are now. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this pendulum swing massively in the opposite direction. Everyone is making these moves, and they're getting knocked off. You know, meanwhile, you have attempts to stop the bleeding, and they're not happening, because you were talking about this earlier when Rick, Ron, and War Dog got together, and Rick said that the three of them were each other's biggest threat and biggest hope.
Mm-hmm.
And he added that the others would want to build their resumes by taking out one of the three, and said in confessional that the three needed each other as shields, because if one of them went out, it would be a feeding frenzy. Well, Rick, the feeding frenzy has already begun.
Yeah.
They needed to think of that a couple votes ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. But they set it in motion with, you just look at everybody who's been taken out, you know, David and then Kelly and now War Dog. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a hard road ahead for my boy, Rick.
Yeah.
Hard road.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there. But yeah, I mean, again, this is the main reason I don't think it mattered much that War Dog was dismissive to Gavin. This group is bloodthirsty for threats.
Mm-hmm.
They've been knocking them out one after another. And War Dog was the next most obvious one, especially after Rick won immunity.
They tasted the blood of the blind side.
Yes. Yes. Well, whether it's the blind side or not, I mean, I think War Dog knew he was going. It's the blood of the threat. And, you know, War Dog was such an obvious target that Lauren even wanted to keep him around and target Rick, because then War Dog would be an easy target to agree on later. But of course, without Rick as a possibility, I think War Dog being the almost unanimous target was going to happen no matter how he acted at that point.
Yeah.
Especially since they were almost all original comma and they have that bond going back to the beginning, not to mention that anti-threat sentiment. Remember, they were against their attorneys because they were threats from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've just gone, you know, kind of moved on. No more attorneys left. Who's the next biggest threat?
Right, exactly. They've gotten all of those four out. Now they can focus on each other. Yep.
So, all right. So I think we've said everything we can in rule number six, so we can move on to the seventh rule, which covers idols and advantages. And You know, War Dog didn't have either of those. But as I mentioned earlier, I have to wonder how much the idea of idols may have played into his decision making in terms of the possibility that Kelly or Lauren had an idol from Manu or Lesu, which would have made it that much more important for the anti-Kelly vote to be a blindside.
Yes, and that is true. But unfortunately, we don't know any of that.
Right. All we can do is speculate. Yes. So
we do. I do know this. He did talk about idols in his pregame interviews, and he wasn't going to be running around looking for him because he didn't want to be that guy. So I don't even know if he looked for him.
I'm sure he looked for him, but he wasn't going to be running around. He didn't want to be Tony.
Right. Exactly. Yes. He was not going to be Tony. He was very adamant about not being Tony.
Yeah. All right. So let's go on to Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting. And a big part of the rule is, of course, that they should, whenever possible, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And as we have seen for several votes, we are still in the part of the game where they are voting out the strong. And we already discussed how War Dog was one of the biggest strategic threats left. You know, if Rick hadn't won immunity, we would have had the question of whether Lauren was right to suggest targeting him instead. But once that option was gone, it seemed to be a pretty easy decision for them. You know, even War Dog's thought so. As he said, if they're smart, they'll vote out War Dog. He was banking on stupidity, but this group of players didn't give it to him. It was probably a nice break for all of them to actually agree on something instead of the usual fractured scheming that had been going on.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he went into this tribal thinking, you know, that he was banking on stupidity, because that's not a real comfortable feeling, I would think, going into tribal council. You're just hoping everyone's going to be stupid and not vote for you. So he clearly knew that he was a potential target, that people would be voting for him and that they'd been talking about him. So, yeah, I think that the decision that the group made was the best one for the group, because really, when you look at who's left, and yeah, Rick Devins isn't a possibility. So who's next in line? Well, here we go. We've got War Dog. So he kind of offered himself up on a silver platter.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we have gone through all the rules. What are your final thoughts on the War Dog?
On the War Dog? I think that the War Dog came into this game and played it in a much different manner than I think most people expected. I know that he appears to look like Tony, and everyone thought he was going to be very Tony-esque, but he did bring his own sense of self to this game. And I think surprised a lot of people. We looked at him and thought he was going to be this military guy who was going to be great in challenges and really kind of wipe the floor with people. Well, he didn't do that. He clearly didn't. He didn't shine in any of the challenges. And I don't know if he did that on purpose or if that was part of his ploy. But we also know that War Dog was calculating and he was figuring things out. And he really was trying to play this game for the best thing for him. He was very focused on himself, which is great, except I think he lost sight of the people around him. He was focusing on the War Dog's game and not anyone else's game. And unfortunately for War Dog, that ended up really biting him in the end, because he became that leader that people didn't really want to listen to. Instead of having an open dialogue with people, he was telling them what to do as opposed to discussing it with them. And I don't think that that settled well with people. But also, he made decisions in the game that caused himself to be viewed as a threat. It wasn't his physical prowess at all, but it was his strategic ability and the way he was playing the game. And he was putting himself front and center. And I think we really saw that in the crazy Julia tribal, when he was taking a situation that was crazy and used it to his benefit and turned the game around at that moment. And I think everybody saw that about War Dog. He had the ability to turn the game around and flip it on its head, which is how he got Kelly voted out. But unfortunately, by doing that, he ended up getting himself voted out. So I think that, you know, War Dog came into this with a plan. He wanted to play the game and he played the game. And I think he was very entertaining in doing so. It's unfortunate that he is now gone, but who knows? We'll see what happens if he gets to come back. But then that would mean he'd have to be really great in that challenge. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be too good for him on that. What is it, edge of extinction? I always say the wrong thing.
Nope, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Extinction Island, whenever someone gets to come back. Yeah. Those are my thoughts on War Dog.
All right. Well, War Dog said in episode 10 that he was a pilot on Lesu, then a passenger, and he wanted to be a pilot again. He became the pilot, but then his plane was shot out of the sky right after he took out the previous lead pilot. From everything we've seen, War Dog should have remained the co-pilot for a couple more votes, so his threat level wouldn't have been so obvious. The question that is still unanswered, and probably will remain so until post-game interviews, is what War Dog's plan was after voting out Kelly. That's probably the most frustrating thing for me, with the lack of information both on the show and outside it. War Dog was too smart to just vote out Kelly on a whim without having a plan like he'd had all along. I believe the plan was to pull together another alliance out of the broken pieces around him. Clearly, that plan didn't work. War Dog needed to make some magic happen to stick around, but he ran out of rabbits to pull out of his hat, and he couldn't misdirect his audience anymore because he was the only one left on stage. The fact that everyone but Rick came together to vote out War Dog tells me that it wasn't the way he treated Gavin in that moment that caused him to be eliminated. He clearly rubbed some people the wrong way over the course of his time there, but the bigger problem was that he was next up on the threat list, and he had just voted out the two big threats before him. And that is why the War Dog lost.
The War Dog. All right.
All right. So, with that out of the way, it is time for predictions. Dun, dun, dun.
I know. Listen, I'm riding high right now.
That's so. Right. Oh, good. Then I'll let you go first.
Okay.
But first, the most important part, because it's the loved ones visit.
Yeah.
And based on the second preview, we get to meet Becca Devins.
I know. I was so excited. I was giddy when I saw her run out. I was like, there she is. I'm very excited to actually get to see her on the television screen. So, yep. There's definitely going to be some fangirling for Becca. I think from a lot of people.
Yes.
Not just me. Yeah.
So, all right. But now it's time for the actual prediction part. And since you got it right, you can go first.
All right. Well, here's my prediction. I think, and I'm going to make a couple of predictions here. I think my boy, Rick, is going to win immunity. So he is not going to be voted out this time. I really think he's going to be on a run. He's already won two in a row. I think he's got a third one that's coming. And I think because of that, Aurora is going to be on the chopping block again, as she has been for quite some time. And I think it's going to be Aurora going home. I'm sorry.
Well, that's boring.
It is boring. But here's the thing. Okay, you want me to be a little more creative? I'll be a little more creative.
Well, no, I got a super creative one.
Oh, so I like that it's super creative.
Okay.
Because I will throw this in there, too. What do we know? Okay. We know that they went through Rick's bag, right? Because of that whole, mm-hmm. Thing that Ron gives him. So,
right.
And that was clearly, I think, Aurora kind of leading the charge on that. I think that's going to not sit too well with people. And her response to Rick in that moment was kind of, I'm going to say it, a little bitchy. Kind of like, who cares? Yeah, I'm going through your stuff. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's really not cool. And so I feel like that's going to be part of the reason why people are like, yeah, we got to get rid of Aurora. Mm-hmm. But it's not that exciting, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay. All right. I mean, obviously, it sure seems like Rick is in serious danger if he doesn't win immunity. He was the only person other than War Dog voting differently. And, the second preview talked about how he is a man alone. But I have a crazy prediction that would be amazingly fun for viewers if it comes true.
Wait, like
so I'm going to make it my pick just out of the sheer enjoyment of it, because we saw in the preview that Ron gives Rick the expired secret advantage. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the advantage includes immunity as one option. You can use it like an immunity idol. We also saw in the preview, like you mentioned, that the others go through his bag and read the advantage. So if they read the advantage, they see that immunity is one option. Well, they got to figure he's going to use it for immunity, right?
Yes.
So this is presuming he doesn't win another challenge in a row. But if they see that he's going to use it for immunity, then they will redirect their target because of it. If they do redirect their target, well, Ron is the most logical person to go after next because he is next up on the threat level. And That would also explain why they don't talk to Ron to find out that Ron gave this to him and it's bogus.
So,
my prediction is that Ron will cause himself to get voted out by trying to pull a fast one on Rick.
Ooh, I like that. That's good. But Julie, was Julie there when they were going through the bag?
I don't know, but I also don't know that. Did Julie know about the advantage?
I don't know if he told anybody about it.
I don't think he told anybody. I don't think anyone knows.
That's good. And if,
so
I like
they
that.
Don't mention it to him. Yeah. So
that's good.
Yeah.
All right. Very creative.
So, yeah. That's a lot less than the boring. They'll just vote for Aurora.
Listen, you know what? I'm still riding high on my prediction from last week. So,
well, you know, and we saw what happened with Wardog riding high on his previous week.
I know he crashed and burned. Yeah. No longer the pilot, or he is the pilot and he's crashing his plane. I get it. I might just crash and burn this week, but I have to celebrate it when I can.
That's right. That's right. All right. As we wrap up, I want to remind people to check out the RHAP patron program by heading over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to help support all of the RHAP podcasts. And of course, take a look at the various Patreon levels to find out what kinds of perks you can get, like special podcasts, videos, buff spells, and much more. Again, that's robhasawebsite.com/patron. And of course, our favorite perk is the patron Facebook group. So once you get there, make sure to say hello to us.
Yes, and you can also say hello to us on Twitter as well. You should follow both myself and David. I am at JessicaLewis89, and David is at David Bloomberg. So you have to follow us both so you can hear the communication back and forth. You can see all the wonderful selfies that David posts all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You are like selfie crazy.
I am.
But yeah, so please follow us both. We do live tweet during all of the Survivor episodes. And you've even started live tweeting during The Amazing Race, I've noticed as well. So
yes.
So people should definitely follow us. Again, that was at JessicaLewis89 and at David Bloomberg.
All right. It is time for a hashtag. Do you have anything?
Oh, what it, you know, I had something that was creative and it has slipped my mind. See, that's terrible. Pilots and passengers.
No, God, no, no. People are so tired of hearing about that.
Crash and
I'm
burn.
I'm going to do it. Well, yeah. All right. Well, I think you just came up with
there
it.
There we go.
Crash and burn. All right.
Hashtag crash and burn.
Hashtag crash and burn. And of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, YX Lost. Before we finish, I just want to remind everyone about what we discussed earlier in the podcast, which is that that poster is now available to everybody. Eric Reichenbach designed it, created it, along with Jessica's guidance and my rules. And again, you can get it at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster. Also, make sure you're getting all the Survivor commentary you can handle by subscribing to all of the RHAP podcasts. All the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We're also on the Reality TV Rehap-Ups feed. In both places, you can find the Know-It-Alls, the Wiggle Room, This Week in Survivor, the B&B, and much more. With that, thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does the editing on all the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. And thanks to one of the smartest co-hosts around, Jessica Lewis, for another great episode.
I love it. You know what I was hoping to have for this episode? If only I had gotten Michelle to record a Jessica, you're right for this episode, because I could have played that over and over again. But unfortunately, I didn't have that. But yes, yeah. So thank you very much, David Bloomberg. This was, again, super fun as always. And we will definitely see you or be doing this again in a week.
That's right. We will see everyone there. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You lost Survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.